Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for listening to the show. We're close to 63,000 downloads of the show, and that's all due to your support. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys and find out about giveaways. You can also email me. I'd love to hear from you. Questions, comments, people you'd like to see on the show, anything you'd like to email me, just send it to SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. Again, that's SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. I just wanted to play a quick public service announcement. This month is Lupus Awareness Month. A lot of people aren't familiar with lupus. It's an autoimmune disease that affects many women and, unfortunately, more so minority women. So I just want to play this announcement real quickly.
Muscle aches, rashes.
To find an answer.
Hair loss. I'm so tired.
You need to ask your doctor the right question.
Could I have lupus?
For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Well, this morning I'm speaking with a wonderful author who actually is traveling right now, but she resides in London. She was originally from the United States in Georgia. And she's here today speaking about her new book, and her name is Sonia Lewis. Good morning, Sonia.
Good morning, Joy.
Thank you so much for calling in. I know you've been traveling a lot. That can be very tiring, but today we're going to just focus on your book. You have so many, oh, my God, we don't have enough time to talk about all the different things in your book. You have, you know, the issue of abortion and sexual abuse. You have the issue of love. You have the issue of kids. You have families, I mean, oh, my God, property, wills, I mean, I could go on and on. But I want to read a little bit from your book, just in the beginning part of the book, to give them a taste of it. When
okay.
She touches her ear, her earlobe, Danny wants to kiss her. He has a multitude of things he wants to say and do to console her. He tries to put those thoughts out of his head, but he moves closer to her. Is there anything I can do to help? She tilts her head and studies him briefly, then curves her lips into a half smile. You've done enough. It's kept me out of the swimmer. I don't want to be in your debt any more than I already am. What a shame. She bites her lip and presses a finger to it. He pulls her hand away and their fingers intertwine, if only for seconds. He moves his face close to hers and nearly kisses her, but the door whines. So you got a little sexual tension going on in there, too.
Yeah.
And there's a couple
really
other scenes in there, too. That was interesting. Listening to your own work be read, right, by somebody else?
No, listening to you read it. That was really very interesting. That was very powerful, Joy.
Yeah, well, it's a powerful book. I mean, you have so many things in there. But let's start from the beginning. For those people who are not familiar with you, your work, and who you are, your name is Sonia Lewis. You're originally from the United States, but you left us. What's the story here? You left us and went to London.
Yes, I did. I've been in London for about 13 years now, and basically what happened, it's my own life story. My husband is English, and I was doing some work for Habitat for Humanity International, where I was actually employed with Habitat, and he was a volunteer as chair of the board of Habitat UK. And we met somehow through Habitat, and so I've been in London for about 13 years.
So that's a love story right there. Wow.
Yeah,
that takes a lot
of
courage,
that's a love story. But I've been writing forever and a day. I remember when I was a little girl, probably about 10 years old, and my youngest sister about 7, and I used to tell her stories. Not in the written form, but the sort of the idea of storytelling. And I would make up stories, you know, imagination, whether it was the kids at school. You know, I drew from those experiences because we sort of, you know, grew up in that time. We were born the 60s and that sort of thing. I was in 62 and she was in 65. And by the time we got to school, a lot was happening in the South, in the United States. And I think that my storytelling in particular, I started drawing from those experiences.
Well, I mean, in terms of African Americans, oral history is a big part of our culture. And a lot of people may not be familiar with that, but that is a way of storytelling, of passing down history, of also dealing with present issues like the conflict of the 60s and the 70s or any time when there was a conflict. people use stories to help process what's going on. So you were also a journalist. Talk to me about that part of your life.
Yes, as I said, it's always been in me to write stories, to tell stories. And when I graduated from high school and went off to university, I went to university in Valdosta, Valdosta State University. That is when I decided to major in English with a minor in journalism. And though I was very, very excited to be a journalist because I wanted to do that side of being able to raise awareness about issues and change things, I became very interested in fiction while I was in university, and interestingly enough, it was a journalism professor who, he was writing a novel, even though he was a major journalist, he was writing a novel, and I became very interested in novel writing through Ed McMinn, who, interestingly enough, I got to see about a week ago. I did a book signing in Georgia. Yes, and I found him through Facebook, and he came down and everything. So I have worked
as
a journalist.
Wait, let's talk about that for a second. Facebook,
yes.
People on Facebook. That is, technology is amazing, amazing thing these days. And I hear that you're a BlackBerry girl. I have to tell you, I'm an iPhone girl. I don't know what's going on. Talk to me. I read something on your blog that you were giving a shout out to the BlackBerry because you felt it was being undermined by the iPhone.
Yes, I did. You know, lots of my friends have pitched over to iPhones, and I was sort of, as Joyce saying to us in my blog, I was pointing out all these iPhone girls and boys are shooting down the BlackBerry.
Right.
But we had a great opportunity to use my BlackBerry in full force, my husband and I, when we were traveling around England. And we thought, aha, I said to all my friends, it's just as good as your iPhone. I just don't have as many applications. But I managed to track him down. I managed to track Ed down, and I made the joke at the book signing. I stalked him through Facebook because, as Joyce said, without technology, it would be impossible to get in touch with him. And he is a successful author himself. He's done about, 21 books. They're all nonfiction. Mm-hmm. And so that made it easier for me to find him. But his Facebook page, you know how we can lock our pages down and not anybody can sort of write to us.
See,
so
yeah,
I had to take a chance, and I wrote on his wall, hello, do you remember me, your student? And he did, and he was absolutely wonderful. And he was probably about 2 to 3 hours away from where I was going to be with the book signing, and he said he wouldn't miss it for the world. He came, and that was a fantastic opportunity to have him there.
That's so wonderful. Let me read a little bit from your book and go into some of the issues that you talk about. But this is from a little later in the book. At last, an opportunity to go to the box that Aunt Mamie left to her. Lil sits at her dining room table in front of the shoebox. She stares at it as if it's crafted of gold, but it isn't. It's just a cardboard box, old and tattered. It's been more than a week since Reverend Watts brought it. She just hasn't had a chance to go through it, what with work, the battle with Will, her own emotions, the incident with Micah, the letdown with Danny, and Jerome has officially contested their divorce. What a mess. So there's a couple things you're dealing with in the book, but one of the big issues is of legacy and people trying to maintain legacies in families, particularly in African-American families, passing down of property, of stories, again, of stories. You have a story within a story in your novel. But talk to me about this idea of legacy and why you think that's important to African-Americans.
Yes, I'll put it into context for a little bit for people who haven't read the book. As Joyce said, there is a big theme of legacies in the book, but the theme of legacies is connected to the sort of probably the main theme of women who do not have children. My character, Lil Lee, is 39 years old, and she's at that stage in her life where she really has to make a choice of whether she's going to have children or not. And I think in the African-American community in particular, and in many communities, traditionally, women have just, we've been expected to have children, and it hasn't always been something that's been thought about or, whether you have a choice or not. But I think in today's generation of women and, perhaps women have more of an opportunity to think about it, and Lil was in this position, and she always thought she wanted to have children because it's a very strong traditional thing. But her aunt, Aunt Mamie, is a woman who does not have children. And she dies and without, you know, ever having had children. And there's a big question about whether you can be fulfilled as a woman or not without being a mother. And this is something that goes throughout the novel. But then the question of legacy and lineage comes out because there is a story within a story where Aunt Mamie leaves her house behind. And there's a big question of who is actually going to get this house because she didn't have children. But she does have a stepson. And his name is Will, and he's Lil's adversary in the book. And I maintain, you know, throughout the novel, and I think it's Lil's experience and her story that because we do have such a rich heritage and family and the memories and all of that is so important. And it's this whole metaphor of the house and where she actually spent a lot of her childhood memories that just because...
Yeah, even her own mother, her memories of her mother. And that's
yes,
also
her
more
mother,
than just the house.
Yeah,
the issue of property
to the house.
And class. You also bring up the issue of classism because the fact that they even owned the property and had land and some of the land had been sold is an amazing issue. And I think that your main character is trying to, you know, maintain, you know, like, look, we have something we need to hold on to. That's very important. But also it comes up the issue of class and the clashing of class in your book between who's good enough for who and light skin and dark skin. That's a big issue, too. Light skin and dark skin issues. Good hair, bad hair. You talk about her hair a lot in the book, and there's a point where there's some trouble where she has some problems with her hair, which if you want a copy of the book, you listeners need to stay tuned, check on Facebook, check on Twitter, see, I'll be giving away a copy of the book. But that's a big issue. I'm a light-skinned woman, and let me tell you something. There's a big issue from the time I was younger till even now, the issue of light-skinned, dark-skinned, you know, who's prettier, the type of hair you have, and I'm with India Irie, you know, I'm not my hair. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, talking
and I think
about that, Sonia, what do you think about that issue of, you know, what's more beautiful, with light or dark, or, you know, the hair straight or curly, I mean...
Yeah, I totally agree with you that beauty comes from within and that it's, you know, we're not our hair and we're not our skin, but I think that we all have to acknowledge that in our growing up, particularly when we were younger, these things on a sort of a surface, you know, sort of level, they were issues. And I think that Lil in particular in the book, I didn't recognize, you know, I think because I have a thing about my hair and it's not whether it's straight or curly, it just has to look good. And so, you know, it's sort of that sort of thing for me. I'm always sort of, you know, I am a hair girl and everything. I can't deny that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the issue of hair, she is a bit, I've had several people to say to me that there's quite a bit of emphasis on her hair. And I think that I wanted to make the point, and there is quite a bit, it's not as much emphasis on skin, but she does, I don't want to give too much away, but she does meet someone in the novel who is a darker-skinned woman. And that's a very sort of, I think, we try to make a real point with ICES because the question does come up, you know, of how we feel about ourselves. And ICES, who is a darker-skinned woman, Lil is a very successful woman, let me make that very clear. But ICES probably has more confidence and probably is a more successful woman. She's more comfortable in her skin. She's lived in a situation as a darker skinned woman, and she knows how to work it. She knows how to build it. She hasn't allowed society to be able to tell her to define who she is because of the color of her skin. And Lil has that going on as well. So I think the big thing that comes out of that, whatever class you're in, whatever your hair is like, whatever color your skin is, this book does have quite a bit of the message in it about being comfortable in your own skin and finding joy in your own space. Whatever you are, whether you're a mother or not, however your skin is, however your hair is, I think this is a big theme.
Let me read a little bit from your book here. You were talking, one of the really important issues, I do a lot of shows on health, and the issue of whether or not she can become pregnant or not and have a baby. This is a really big issue. And unfortunately, in the book, we find out that she has fibroids. And I always talk to people, I hope that they're listening, is taking care of yourself, getting your checkups, going to see the OBGYN if you're a woman, if you're a man, making sure you check your prostate, getting a colonoscopy, whatever you can do to prevent could save your life and also open up choices to you. But let me read from this book. She doesn't recall having either, but she will heed his advice. Is that it? I'm afraid not, he says. Your fibroids have grown immensely. How can that be? She has had 3 procedures, 2 myomectomies to remove them, after which they returned each time, and a uterine fibroid embolization to block the arteries that supply blood to fibroids. Without blood, they should shrink. No wonder my stomach protrudes. Your uterus is the size of a 4-month pregnancy. So this is a really important issue that you bring up, Sonia. Why did you bring up the issue of fibroids? You could have brought up something else, but are you familiar with this issue? Do you have a friend who had to deal with fibroids? Why did you bring up the issue of fibroids in the story?
I'm all too familiar with them, unfortunately. I bring up the issue of fibroids because I am drawing from my personal experiences with fibroids. My story is clearly not the same as Lil's. I want to make that very clear because one of my readers called me and said, oh, my goodness, we won't give too much away, but, you know, there's one particular story.
Yeah.
Please tell me that's not your story. And so I said, no. It is fiction. But fibroids is a deeply personal issue for me and my sisters and my mother. I think we've each been affected by fibroids in one way or another. And I do hasten to add that I have 5 sisters, and each of them have a child. And fibroids were sort of one of the looming health issues when I came to that place myself and was quite sort of obsessive in thinking about whether it was right for me to become a mother. And one of the determining factors for me was that I have fibroids, and I think that many people just think that they're a nuisance, and you know they're something that they're not that big of a deal. They're just a bit of a nuisance. But I can tell you, as a woman who has had to endure them, you know they're a lot more than a nuisance. They can have an impact on fertility. I know many people have been pregnant with fibroids and it's been fine. But I think there have been others that fibroids have caused major problems for as well.
Well, I think the issue, too, is that people may not even know they have fibroids, or they may think that the symptoms may be exacerbated during your cycle and think, oh, it's just a bad cycle. But I want to let women know, because I also did a show on endometriosis, that if you sense that something is not right within your body, take the time to make the phone call, make the appointment to see your doctor. There may be things, medicine, different types of surgery, whatever, to help you deal with whatever you have to go through. You don't have to live through pain, in particular with your cycle. Let's talk real quickly. You deal with a really intense issue, though, of rape.
Yes.
In the story. I don't want to give too much away, but women, you know, the issue of being silent in a community is also another issue that you bring up, and then there's the rape. Why do you think so many women are silent when they may have been assaulted or raped, the issue of trauma? Talk to me about that.
Yes, I think that, first of all, you know, in going and looking at this question, I think women are silent because, again, we can say that Lil didn't want to talk about it. I think there's an embarrassment surrounding it, you know, around the subject, feeling that it was a very, very traumatic experience. It was a very painful experience for her. And talking about it, I think sometimes women feel that it's reliving it. But I also think that there is this, there's still the internalizing that, could I have done something differently? Did I do something to cause this to happen? And I don't think there should be a question, you know, in a person's mind. Unfortunately, these things do happen. But I think it's those two main things of real embarrassment, not wanting to relive it, and then also just wondering, could I have avoided this some way, somehow?
Yeah. Well, you have a twist on it, and I don't want to give it away to the listeners. You're going to have to pick up the book to find out there's a little twist with this rape that's going to blow you away. It's going to be something very unexpected. We have about 10 minutes left. Let's talk about witchcraft. That is something going through the little creepy there. I was reading the book at night one day, and I was like, well, okay, let me not read this right now because I don't want to have any bad dreams, you know. The idea of witchcraft, did you see this working with herbs when you were growing up somewhere in Georgia? How did you come to this point to bring witchcraft into the story?
Well, you know, I actually did not have any personal experiences of per se. And this is really interesting because the first time that I mean, you hear about things in the community because I did grow up in a small town community. And you would hear people say, oh, this person does roots or that person does roots. But you just sort of brush it off and say, yeah, what is that? What does this mean? And you have to believe in it. But I have lived in New York City. And when I was living in New York City as a young writer, PR person, I was very interested in reading short stories in African American literature. And I couldn't possibly tell you the name of the person who wrote the short story, and they've probably gone on to become quite, you know, a successful writer because this was, you know, 20 years ago or so. But I read a short story in Essence magazine where someone won, you know, this was a short story contest that I entered as a young writer and didn't even place. But the winning story blew me away, and she dealt with this whole idea of witchcraft in the African American community, and that's always stuck with me. It was so beautifully done, and then I started getting more into the way that Toni Morrison handles it. And there is an English writer who is an English writer called Doris Lessing, and she deals with quite a mystical sort of witchcraft thing in her writing, and I became quite obsessed with it. And I think it has a lot to do with just trying to understand how the human being and how the mind really works, and whether people do have sort of, some people have special powers and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of research on it to put it all in perspective as well. And there's so much out there that you can find out about these, you know, witches having gardens, and it's amazing. And so let me read a little bit
from your book. Since you brought up the issue of the gardens and stuff, there's a point in a book here. She types in the word witch. A whole lot comes up. Her eyes dart all over the place. She sighs. How is she going to get through all this? Then she types in the word roots alongside witch. The computer thinks for a while, groaning and straining, and then it produces a slew of things like she has opened a scroll. Words like a modern witch's garden draw her in. She hasn't ever heard of such stuff. She hesitates before clicking on the link, wondering if she might land herself in some kind of trouble. Will somebody find out and accuse her of being a witch? She reads the first line under the headline, Pontensilla Recta Warini Sink Full. I don't even know if I said that right.
Don't worry, I have one.
This is a mouthful, but the next few lines make her sit still. This sinkful, also known as five-finger grass or five-leaf grass, is a perfect addition to the witch's garden. That plant she took from Mamie's room looked like a hand with five fingers. So people, just be ready. Get your warm cup of tea. Don't read it at nighttime because you might get, maybe read it outside on your porch or on your patio or while you're on the bus, because you might get a little creeped out because there's a little creepy part. And there's a major, major encounter with a quote-unquote witch. And so you got to read the book to learn about that. So now that you've written this book, how do you feel? Do you feel relieved? Is this something you've been walking around with for a couple of years? Or was it just like an instantaneous thing? How long did it take you to write the book?
Well, this particular one, from start to finish, I would say it took me about 6 years. And let's hope that it doesn't take me 6 years to write each and every novel. But I have been writing for a long time, and I have 2.5 other novels. A total, I've written 4 novels, but this is the first one to actually, you know, be ready to be published and to be published. And we will go back and we'll have a look at some other things. But we also, life moves on, and I tend to write about what I'm really passionate about and obsessive about because I love fiction as a form to be able to really explore things. But as I said, from start to finish, and that's including, to be fair, the plotting and the research, the writing, the editorial process, you know, the design, everything, putting the whole novel together.
So what's next for you? Can you give us a hint of what your next book might be or
absolutely.
Subject matter might be?
Absolutely. I've started my next book, and I have to confess because I'm sort of tracing all over the world right now and not going back to London until Sunday, and we get there on Monday. I started my next book, and it is called The Blindsided Prophet, and that probably tells a little bit itself. He is a person with mystical powers, but we're going to keep it real. I know some people like to be pretty, you know, real about things. And he is a prophet, a modern-day prophet.
Okay.
But we, you know, if you've read The Baroness, then you have a pretty strong idea that I do like to have very real characters and strong character development. And so he is going to have many encounters with people, women in particular. And this is weird. This is where we're going.
I'm
going
to get intrigued. Well, look, you have to come back. You're going to have to come back on. Once you finish the book, you're going to have to come back on so we can talk about it and share it with the audience. Everybody, please check out SoniaLewis.com. That's her blog. Also, check Facebook and Twitter. I'll be giving away a copy of her book, The Baroness. Thank you so much, Sonia. We only have a couple minutes left, so I need to say thank you so much for coming on this morning. I know you've been traveling again, and I hope everybody checks out her book, The Baroness. Check out SoniaLewis.com. You can download it on Amazon. Where else can people download the book?
We can download the book from on Amazon, but also if you're doing an ebook, you can get it, you know, from Sony, from Apple, all of the ebook sellers. But in terms of the softback, you can buy it from Amazon, Barnes and Nobles. If you're listening in the UK, WH Smith, Waterstones, Amazon there. So it's any online retailer you can get this book.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and I wish you much success with this one. And you've got to come back on to talk about The Prophet, okay?
Yes, thank you so much, Joy, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, you have a wonderful Saturday.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Just got off the phone with Sonia Lewis and her new book, The Baroness. Check it out. Also, you might be able to win a free copy if you become a fan on Facebook or follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys. On Facebook, you can look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Speak to the next